Well, good evening, everybody. It's fair to say that the Bible, as the years go by, is being criticised more and more. It's also being ridiculed, it's being made fun of more and more. But you know what's most sad? I think what's most sad is it's being ridiculed by people who've actually read very little of it. They've probably read a little bit of it at school many years ago and have forgotten it and not read very much in those days anyway when they were at school. And now they choose to ridicule it. And so as announced, this is a series of presentations being given in various locations in Christadelphian halls that aims to put forward some ideas for us therefore to decide from reading the Bible ourselves whether it in fact does have authority in the 21st century. It seems strange then that we're going to go back some 3,500 years. And the world would say, what could that possibly help me with? What possibly could be the relevance of words written 3,500 years ago? And as we shall see, they most certainly are relevant to the current day, in showing the authority that the Bible has, in that it's not the word of man. It is the word of God, and therefore the words penned, as we shall see in this particular topic, are ahead of their time, ahead of the thinking of the day, so much so that the words that are written have only recently, in the last 100 or 200 years, been confirmed by modern science. So we're heading back to God's people Israel, and we're going to turn first of all to Exodus chapter 3, where we've just read of the calling of a man, Moses, who is going to be used by God to deliver God's people from bondage in the land of Egypt, to come out of Egypt, to go forward through a wilderness journey into a land that had been promised to their fathers, to Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. And during that time of movement out from Egypt into this land that had been promised to their fathers, they were given a law, which was a law ahead of its time. Because it was given by God, and hence, as recorded in the Bible, it has authority and power right down to our day and generation. Now, before we go any further, we have to say that as Christadelphians, we are not saying that we are supposed to obey what's called the law of Moses, Moses being used to give this law to his people. We are not saying that we are bound by the letter of the law that we're going to read some of this evening. Far from it, in fact. In the Lord Jesus Christ, we have freedom from these things. And Israel themselves are called upon not to follow these anymore, but to be under grace which comes by the Lord Jesus Christ. So we're just using it, we say just using it, to show the authority of the Bible as being written by God, not by a man, and therefore having authority. So we see then that Moses here is called to deliver the people of Israel. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And we've read about the burning bush, his inquisitiveness to find out what that's all about. And as the chapter goes through, God reveals himself to Moses and says, this is how you're going to talk to the people of Israel about me. Verse 14, God said unto Moses, I am that I am, or as your margin may say, I will be that I will be. And he said, thus saith, shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am, or I will be, hath sent me unto you. And that is describing in God's very name God's plan and purpose. At any particular time in history, he is to be something, past, present, and in the future. But more about that at some other time from this platform, I'm sure. So a word of warning, last time I used this laptop, I got halfway through and the mouse decided to stop clicking. So we'll see how far we get tonight with the modern technology. A law ahead of its time then. Well, we're going to look at the Bible and we're going to see this system, some of the system of laws that were given to God's people Israel to follow. We're going to look into various categories. We're going to see things about community health regulations that have only come into the modern world between 100 and 200 years ago. We're also going to look at civil law and see how the rules of civil law are there, which, if were followed today, would definitely make the world a better place. And we're going to see how this remarkable law in the early part of the Bible that now has relevance today in teaching us that God is its author and as it is part of the proof that the Bible is inspired and has relevance and authority today. Let's start off then with British medical officer who was appointed, the first one appointed in Liverpool in 1847. And it's at that point really when the country like Britain decided that it had to take hold of medical health and hygiene in this country, 1847. Yet as we shall see, the things we're going to read about in the Bible, thousands of years ago, show its importance, its relevance, its authority, and come right through to the modern day. We're going to look at community medicine, guidance on food, disposal of waste, the control of disease, and as we shall see, therefore, we'll see that the Bible is indeed ahead of its time. So what then does the Bible have to say about food? The slide frames it, the good food guide of the Bible. Well, we're going to look at some references, and the Bible has no restrictions on fruit and vegetables. So laws regarding eating, the foods we can eat, or God's people were told they could eat, no restrictions on fruit and vegetables. However, the flesh of animals and the eating thereof was severely restricted. And therefore, we ask the question, why was that? And why is it that it's taken nearly 35 centuries for science to come along and agree with these things? Well, it's because the word, the Bible, was inspired and is inspired by God and therefore is part of the evidence that we can see that it has authority in this day and age. And we're going to turn to Leviticus now. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 11. Now the references are turning up. I'm going to read from the New King James. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. And we're going to go to Leviticus chapter 11 to begin with. So it's the third book of the Bible, and we're going to go to Genesis chapter 11 and read from verse 3. So the law that was given to God's people Israel through Moses says this: among the animals, whatever divides the hoof, having cloven hooves and chewing the cud, that you may eat. So it's saying that is acceptable. Cloven hoof and chewing the cud, you can eat. But as we shall see, there are the restrictions that are put in place. So sheep, cows and deer are all permitted. That's Leviticus 11 and verse 3. All meat eating animals are not allowed. So all meat eating animals are not allowed. And also pigs are excluded. Now you might say just a moment ago, we eat pork today in various forms, and indeed some of us may do. Some of you might not like pork, I may have an objection to it, but many people, including myself, like a nice bit of pork in various forms. In fact, if someone says to me, bacon sandwich, then I certainly have to have a bacon sandwich within the next 24 hours. So I'm definitely a pork lover. But you ask yourself the question, why is it? Well, it's only because of modern hygiene regulations that we can eat pork today. We have to be protected from pig tapeworm and roundworm. So the law that was given to the people of Israel, yes, it had spiritual significances, but it also had physical significance in terms of the health of the people. And so these larvae and these worms can cause blindness, they can cause paralysis, epilepsy, or even death itself. So 3,500 years ago, yeah, they were taught that they should not eat pig. And there were not these regulations in those days that we have in a modern country like ours. And so it certainly was dangerous. And so the law of Moses was correct in saying that these should not be eaten. So we're going to go now forward to Leviticus again. Leviticus chapter 11 again. Forward in this chapter. And we're now going to read verse 9 and 10. These shall ye eat of all that are in the waters. Whatsoever hath fins and scales in the waters and in the seas and in the rivers, them shall ye eat. I'll slip back to my old King James, I do apologise. Reading further on, but all in the seas or in the rivers that do not have fins and scales, they are an abomination to you. So that's what God's people were told. That they were able to eat the things we see at the top there, the fins and scales, but anything else they were not allowed to eat. So we have there things that were allowed to be eaten, fish with fins and scales, but all other aquatic animals were forbidden. Here we see then some examples of the types of things that were certainly not allowed. So it takes careful rearing of shellfish to ensure that they are safe to eat. And again, it's only because of modern standards in this country and other parts of the world that we can eat shellfish and the like with some degree of safety. Although I have to say, again, speaking from personal experience, I think it's a psychological dislike of it now from when I was younger, when I certainly had some dodgy shellfish when I was in my teens. And the human is made to, we're told by the scientists, to reject such things, even though you may know they're nice to eat. But if you've had a bad experience of something like that, then the human brain apparently triggers a mechanism that says, I don't like those anymore. And it certainly has happened with me, and shellfish and me, I'm afraid, don't get on, even though I think I probably could quite like them. And that's what they're told, quite clearly, that they're not to eat such things. And so careful rearing in this country and careful food and hygiene standards mean that we can eat such things with relative security, although, of course, as we've said sometimes, as I've experienced, it's not the case. Crabs have parasites, and again, this can cause all sorts of troubles. They can have pass on to us parasites that live in our lungs. And so Moses again tells the people of Israel, these are not to be eaten. A law most certainly ahead of its time regarding the health of the people, the food that they were and were not to eat. We're going to go now to Leviticus chapter 7, and we're going to just look at what Leviticus says about fat. Certainly the types of food we should be eating in the modern day has been examined in great detail. Yes, the scientists contradict themselves from time to time. One year something is good for you, the next year it's bad for you. And moderation in all things, I think, is probably the order of the day. But Leviticus chapter 7, verse 23, we read this. Speak to the children of Israel, saying, you shall not eat of any fat of ox or of sheep or of goat. I have to say that if I was under the law some 3,500 years ago, I'd probably have great difficulty in holding that, because I do like a little bit of fat on my meat and I do like a little bit of crackling on my pork. But that is a law that was given by God to his people. So animal fat was restricted. And modern medical advice tells us the same thing. Let's read on then. Having eaten, then in the modern world, we don't talk about such things as sewage disposal very much in the modern world, because all the systems of the world are there for us. We don't see these things, do we? We very often don't see electricity coming into our homes. We don't see gas coming into our homes. We don't see water coming into our homes. Neither do we see sewage disposal. We flush the toilet and away it all goes. And the modern world disposes of such things for us. But this was dealt with in the Bible. And it's hard to imagine, isn't it, when you think about it? Hard to imagine a time when man didn't understand these things. And this was such a time. Man didn't understand these issues. And so for many people of the world, in the day of Israel being called out of Egypt, many people in the world had illnesses simply because of bad hygiene. So we're going to read on a little bit further. The Bible and modern systems. There's a modern sewage farm. I live not far away from a small sewage farm, and a few years ago lived quite close to a very large one that dealt with an awful lot of sewage from the main part of Birmingham. But let's go to Deuteronomy now, and chapter 23. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, chapter 23. The law, again, was ahead of its time. Why? Because it was written by God, and therefore gives the Bible authority in this modern day. And the people are told, designate a place. This is chapter 23, verse 12 and 13. Designate a place outside the camp where you can go to relieve yourself as part of your equipment. Have something to dig with. And when you relieve yourself, dig a hole and cover up your excrement. That's the New King James version of those verses. So the Bible is very clear about these things and how we should live lives. It was ahead of its time in terms of what it said about such matters. The first sewage treatment works were built in Britain in the 19th century. And the law of Moses recommended it thousands of years before. Though some other parts of the world had sewage treatments of certain degrees, perhaps a little earlier on. Let's move on then. Disease then. Disease control. It's in the press a lot, isn't it, about the control of disease in of all places in hospitals. And hospitals have been known now to have lost sight in the last 10, 20, 30 years of the basic principles of hygiene. The push for more and more economy, both economy of scale and the basic cutting back on costings, has meant that the basic principles, as outlined by God 3,000 or more years ago, they have been forgotten. And only recently has there been a push to get them back in to hospitals. Washing of hands after handling dead bodies. Let's just briefly look at Numbers chapter 19. They were clearly told what they had to do. There were spiritual principles here for God's people, but also there were physical hygiene principles ahead of their day, thousands of years ahead of their day. Numbers chapter 19, verses 11 and 12. Whoever touches the dead body of anyone will be unclean for 7 days. He must purify himself with water on the third day and on the seventh day. Then he will be clean. So washing is clear, and the purification process had to be gone through. A system of quarantine then, which is now a modern standard, was in place for God's people thousands of years ahead of its time. Surgeons used to handle the dead and then do operations without washing. We can't imagine those times, can we? You can't imagine how there was a time when surgeons in this country would handle dead bodies and would then do operations. And it was because hygiene systems and hygiene knowledge were very, very restricted until relatively recently. We can't imagine days like that, can we? And there are other examples, aren't there, and which caused many people to die of infections rather than be with the operation or the illness that they went into hospital or whatever sort of surgery to have cured. How sad then that was. The Bible was ahead of its time, and many might have lived if the Bible's advice had been taken. And so in recent years, for those of you who have been in hospitals recently, or even just going to your own GP, you will see the hygiene systems have been improved tremendously in the last few years. I remember the time, looking back at my own personal experience as a child being taken into hospitals. And even as in my young days, I knew who matron was. The matron was someone to be feared. And the matron was in charge and kept such things as hygiene standards high. I remember sitting on a hospital bed once when I was visiting my father and told my parents severely that I was not to sit on the bed and were not even to actually lean forward and touch the bed. And it seemed quite, I was shocked by it, I remember as a young boy. But you know, it was all part of the hygiene system that was in place that went quite slack, so we're told, in recent years, but now is back at the top of the agenda. It was in the law that we had to have a degree of sterile environment in certain situations. The washing of hands, therefore, both with soap or with other chemicals, is prevalent now in our modern society because of the risk that unwashed hands poses for us. So disease control then, infectious diseases. Let's go to Leviticus again, chapter 13. Isolation of infectious diseases, again, that's in here. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Leviticus 13, verses 45 and 46. Now the leper on whom the sore is, talking about leprosy, and the Bible has a leprosy, perhaps not quite as we see in the modern day, it can be various issues regarding leprosy and illnesses of the skin. Now the leper on whom the sore is, his clothes shall be torn and his head bare. He is unclean and he shall dwell alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. Now, that's not to say that civilizations throughout the world, even in Israel's day, didn't have people being ostracized because of their illnesses. But the law of Moses, given to God's people, said there had to be quarantine. It was a law ahead of its time and showed that it was indeed written by God. And so, modern systems of quarantine have been derived from the law of Moses. The isolation then of people, modern practice of keeping people away while the infectious diseases are cured, were derived from the people of Israel. Leviticus 13 verses 4 to 6. Leviticus chapter 13 verses 4 to 6 says, example of such issues of the skin. If the bright spot be white in the skin of his flesh, and in the sight he be not deeper than the skin, and the hair thereof be not turned white, then the priest shall shut him up that hath the plague 7 days. And the priest shall look on him the seventh day, and behold, if the plague in his sight be at a stay, and the plague spread not in the skin, then the priest shall shut him up 7 days more. And so it goes on. It's talking about examining of people to see what the situation is regarding their disease and acting accordingly in various way methods of a quarantine. So moving quickly on then, we've seen recommendations of quarantine in medical practice are really the last resort in terms of illness, keeping people away from each other, if it was necessary. What then of civil law? How were the people of Israel told to live their lives and their dealings, how their dealings with each other were supposed to be ordered? Let's consider that then now for a few minutes. The law given to God's people will be seen as very strict by many people. And it had a civil law as part of it. And many of the problems we have in the modern world would certainly not be there if the principles laid down in the law of Moses were in place. Some of the things we're going to see, if we were to show them to bankers, to politicians, and to the man in the street, they would laugh at them and say, this is absolutely ridiculous. As we shall see, there is a fairness to them which is missing in the modern world, which brings about so many of the problems that we see. First of all then, the equal division of wealth. Land was wealth in the days of God's people, Israel. The possession of the land that you had to do things with, whether it was providing food for yourself or for trade, whatever it was, land was seen as being key to your family and to your tribe. Areas of land given to people. We're going to go to Numbers chapter 33 to see this principle. Numbers chapter 33 and verse 54. An equality that is not in the modern world. And an inequality of the modern world brings about so many problems we can see around us today. Numbers 33 and verse 54. And you shall divide the land by lot as an inheritance among your families. To the larger you shall give a larger inheritance, and to the smaller you shall give a smaller inheritance. So now we're at the talking about this land that we started our discussion about. The land that had been promised to God's people. And this was the principle that was being laid down about how they were going to divide it among their families and among their tribes and among individuals. You shall divide the land by lot as an inheritance among your families. To the larger you shall give a larger inheritance, and to the smaller you shall give a smaller inheritance. Wealth in terms of land was divided proportionately. We live in a world where there is massive poverty in parts of even countries like this. And in other parts of the world, horrendous poverty, and yet around the corner, massive wealth. And this brings about all sorts of issues and brings about crime itself and also can bring about health issues, as we know so well. So a fair distribution of land was key to God's people entering their land. Now families still became poor for various reasons. Sometimes it could be reasons of their stupidity themselves or things that are just happening to people. So it's not to say that people didn't become poor. They most certainly did become poor. And so they would have to borrow or even sell part of their land. But God's people had rules and regulations regarding that as well. Because if you sold some of your land, then you would have less land to pay for any other debt you have, less land to look after your family or your tribe. And so you could be in a poverty trap, once in it, never getting out. The modern credit crisis we have today, people are in a situation that they cannot get out from. They're in so much debt that there is literally no way out for many people. So what was it then that God says regarding this? How then could this possibly be dealt with? Well, let's move on then to the Bible again, Leviticus chapter 25 this time, where we see a system that would be ridiculed today in the modern world, the system of Jubilee. Leviticus chapter 25, and we'll go to verse 13. Leviticus 25 and verse 13 says, in this year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to his possession. Now the year of Jubilee came round every 50 years. So in the year of Jubilee, they would get their land back. This law very wisely prevented families from permanently losing their land. That's not to say that the Jew didn't find ways round it occasionally. They did and were criticised for it. But the principle was clear, that there is a clearing of the decks, if you like, every 50 years or so, that avoided this poverty trap and allowed an equality to come back to God's people. So it's every 50 years then, permanent loss of land and inheritance was prevented through this year of Jubilee. So moving quickly on, as time is pushing on, the money was controlled, borrowing was controlled, and clearly in this modern world that is something that is most sorely needed. Leviticus 25 verse 16, according to the multitude of years you shall increase its price, and according to the fewer number of years you shall diminish its price, for he sells to you according to the number of the years of the crops. And so the year of Jubilee brought about this bringing back of equality amongst the people. We're now going to turn on to the day of rest. The law of Moses introduced a compulsory day of rest once a week. Now, as we've said, Christadelphians are not saying that we're bound by Sabbath law in any way. The church around us talks about a day of rest, a Sabbath day. That's an issue on its own about when exactly the Sabbath is. We believe Sunday is the first day of the week. And yet this day of rest for Israel was clear. Let's go to Exodus chapter 20 and verse 9. Exodus 20 and verse 9. A day of rest where God's people were supposed to consider themselves in relation to God. Exodus chapter 20, verse 9 and 10. 6 days you shall labour and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. And so God knew that there was benefit in a particular day of rest for people to consider their position before their God, particularly Israel, to consider their position before their God. And nowadays we're told that it certainly does help efficiency at work for people to have times of rest. This wasn't just so that they could consider God, but there was also a time of physical rest for the body that God had created when he created man in the garden. What about criminality? Well, the law of Moses has a lot to talk about regarding the treatment of criminals. Let's just look at one or two key things. This would seem unusual, although to a degree it's starting to have some relevance in the modern world, particularly as this government seems to want to try to close down prisons and have people only locked up who are a danger to society. It says here, Exodus 22 verse 1, if a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. So this law isn't just saying you've got to give back what you've taken. There's a punishment there as well, because it says you have to give back more. So no prisons. Criminals were responsible for their actions and they had to recompense the people from the things they had stolen and more. They had to recompense the people they had taken from. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. Oh, very radical views in those days. A thief had to work as a servant to pay back the debt that he had to the person that he had stolen from. That's here to a degree in the modern world, isn't it? With community service orders being given, but it's not being done very well, and very often that is being ridiculed by those people who are on community service orders. Much wiser than locking up. The prisons are overflowing with people actually who are no danger to society and should in fact, according to God's law, be paying back to the people that they stole from. Consideration for others. So this is now sort of social law, isn't it? And how we should look upon each other. How do we in this country look upon each other? Well, Leviticus 19, verse 18, Israelites are told, you shall love your neighbour as yourself. This modern society that we live in, it's very much a look after number one society, where people, let alone, don't know their neighbour's names, let alone do anything with them. And so this neighbourliness and looking after each other and caring for each other, sadly, has gone. And people very often, growing numbers, seem to want to get away with whatever they can, keeping themselves to themselves. And so we see that modern law allows people, social law and social attitudes, allows people to get on with their own lives with no consideration for others at all. But the Israelites were told they were to consider each other very seriously in the way that they dealt one with the other. So, Exodus chapter 23, we're not going to read it all, tells us about these sorts of things. It talks about a slander, it talks about bearing false witness, talks about rumour as well, spreading rumours. Exodus 23 verse 1, you shall not circulate a false report. Perhaps I'm directing this comment now more at the younger generation. We need to take care with social networking and the spreading of false reports. And reports that may not be false, but just don't need to be said. And for the modern generation growing up, I'm not claiming to be a Luddite, and I'm not claiming also to be up to date with every piece of modern technology that's around. But we do need to take care in the way we treat one another, and the things that we say, spreading false reports, or things that don't need to be said to each other about other people. Slander and perjury was forbidden, and consideration of other people was paramount according to God's law. That's very relevant, isn't it? This slide was put together before the most recent riots. God knows what is in man. He knows what he's like, and he knows that if you get a crowd together, there can be trouble. And so it was not permitted. Exodus 23 verse 2, you shall not follow a crowd to do evil. We saw the terrible sights, didn't we, in our newspapers, our televisions, on the internet. And again, social networking was used as a mechanism for promoting is getting together of crowds of wicked people to perform acts of criminality. Mob violence then was not allowed with God's people. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. You shall not pervert the judgment of the poor in his dispute. In this country, increasingly, the less well off have less access to law. The most well off have the best access to law. The law of God to Israel said that was not to be the case. Everybody was to be treated equally in the sight of the law of God. And so we could go through the rest of the verses. I'm not going to read them. Lots of things regarding how they were to deal with each other. A law ahead of its time. So let's move quickly on through these, because it goes without saying that in this room now we agree that bribery encourages corruption. And so there's a current scandal brewing now. Not that any wrongdoing has gone on in government, but leaving themselves open to possibilities of bribery and corruption clearly is not appropriate. Consideration for others, both the stranger and the nation of Israel themselves. Why? Because Israel were strangers in the land of Egypt. Racial hatred was not to be part of Israel's way of life, because they had been hated by other people because they were of Israel. And so that goes on today, doesn't it? Anti-Semitism is rife in the world and growing. And so it is then, a law ahead of its time, both in terms of the natural things of man and in the way man deals with each other. So what are the recommendations then that come from the law regarding the food? Fruit and vegetables, not restricted. Fat and unsafe meats, including seafood, were restricted. Safe disposal of sewage waste, washing of hands to avoid infection, and the isolation of infectious diseases are all part of this law ahead of its time. And in terms of criminality then, equal division of wealth. Extremes of poverty were to be prevented by the law that God had put in place for his people. A day of rest for a consideration of one's position before one's God. Criminals responsible for their deeds. Consideration to be shown one toward another. Deceit and lying forbidden. Mob violence prohibited. And equal justice for the poor and for the rich. Goes without saying then that bribery and corruption was not allowed. Racial hatred then of God's people continues to this day, and race towards race throughout the world. And so the challenge then is for us, isn't it, to decide. The Bible has authority because it was written from God. It was a law ahead of its time, showing that God has inspired this word for us to look at. How did the same writers produce exactly equally remarkable civil law? It took the rest of the world 3,500 years to catch up with a lot of the things that we read in the Bible. The challenge to us then is to see if we believe it in this modern day. Where else then can you find similar evidence, that's the question, of an inspired work? There is no other book in the world. There is much more evidence that the Bible is an accurate and reliable source of information beyond what we looked at tonight. We can indeed trust the Bible and the advice that it gives. Finally, there are some booklets available, not particularly here, but you can certainly get them off the internet and we can have them available for us to look at whenever. The challenge then is for us. Are we willing to receive the word of God and to trust it? Or are we willing to go on in man's way? One day, the Lord Jesus Christ will return to the earth to establish the throne of God in the earth, when the righteous law of God will be everywhere. Do we want to be part of that great day? If we do, the call is for us to be baptized in the saving name of Jesus and to wait patiently for his return.